Comparisons are odious. My uncle said this to me during a phone conversation. I remember it well, probably because the word odious sounds like what it means, extremely unpleasant. It was a confession. He had compared two of his great nephews of about the same age. One had behaved worse than the other at a family wedding, and he pointed it out to me because the well-behaved one was my son. But he regretted passing judgment on the other. And when he first compared my son to my cousin's son, I did feel a little superior in my parenting. I'm glad he later made the confession. They were only 4 years old after all. This was almost 35 years ago, and I still think of it often. I think of it when I do compare my children or grandchildren to others as better or worse, or more or less advanced. I think of it when I compare myself to others' appearance, intellect, behavior, social status, beliefs, or political leanings. I compare gifts and talents, home decor, wardrobes, and presence on social media. My mood can run in direct correlation to what I have been looking at or thinking about as I compare my life to others. This is what experts call the comparison trap, and it is insidious and damaging to ourselves and others. Not all comparisons are bad. Some comparisons are useful and necessary. Comparisons act as a baseline for performance or quality, or a point of reference for health and wellness. Comparisons in poetry and literature in the form of similes and metaphors help paint a picture and drive a point home. Comparisons are helpful for making purchases. I love the option to put products side by side and compare features when choosing a vacuum or a cell phone plan. Comparisons are helpful when choosing a school to attend, a church to go to, a town to live in. We want to be where we share the values of the people around us. Often, however, the choices we make because of comparisons are based on social pressure and can truly be a trap. As Brené Brown says, we want to be the best or have the best of our group. The comparison mandate becomes this crushing paradox of fit in, but stand out. It's not be yourself and respect others for being authentic. It's fit in, but win. Dr. Brown defines comparison as the crush of conformity from one side and competition from the other. This crush of conformity can have dire circumstances or consequences. According to a Psychology Today article, social comparison theory is the idea that individuals determine their own social and personal worth based on how they stack up against others. Later research has shown that people who regularly compare themselves to others may find motivation to improve, but may also experience feelings of deep dissatisfaction, guilt, remorse, and engage in destructive behaviors like lying or disordered eating. We are evolutionarily hardwired for comparison. It happens to us unconsciously. We can't simply stop comparing. In primitive times, we needed the capacity to size up our adversaries and recognize threats. It was rooted in the need to defend ourselves and our people and maintain power. In Loudoun County, Virginia in 2024, however, social comparison is mostly about being the best, having the best, or standing out the most, and often leads to either a superiority complex and harsh judgment, or that crushing need to conform, whereby we lose our true selves, our values, or our self-worth. There is a direct connection between comparison and judgment. In my opening story, a comparison was made, and I immediately went to judging my cousin's parenting skills. But in other areas, I've also turned that judgment onto myself and have thought that I am not a good enough parent or wife or friend or human being when comparing myself with others. These judgments lead to a subtle and sometimes not so subtle violence towards ourselves or others, a violence that hurts the soul and psyche and sometimes the body, and prevents us from being who we were meant to be. Most weeks, I practice yoga. According to the Yoga Sutras, there is an eightfold path leading to liberation, known as the eight limbs. The limbs are an ethical framework for living. The first limb, the yamas, are a collection of moral restraints. And the first yama is ahimsa, which literally means without injury or nonviolence. I've also heard it called non-judgment. In my yoga classes, the instructor encourages us to embrace ahimsa. Throughout class, as they call out the next pose, they gently instruct us to be observers, to become curious, to ask questions instead of pass judgment. What would it feel like to hold the pose a little longer or stretch a little deeper? Yoga is not a competitive sport. There's no Olympic yoga. It's not a race to the finish. There are no rankings. There is practice and non-judgment, no right or wrong, and ideally no comparing. A portion of every practice is dedicated to balancing poses. In tree pose, one leg is grounded like the trunk of a tree. Then the other foot propped on your thigh or calf, you raise your arms slowly as branches growing toward the sun. I fix my gaze to one spot in front of me, my drishti. I focus on my breathing and my stance, and I stay balanced. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I look around and see the ones faltering and think, aren't I doing well? And then from the other eye, I see the strong, svelte yogi doing the one-handed handstand while the rest of their body is twisted into a pretzel and think, what am I even doing here? Comparison pulls me out of focus. I lose balance. I fall out of the pose. Ahimsa goes out the window, and all manner of judgment and that subtle violence happens. I judge myself. I judge others as I compare my performance. And as judgment turns inward, I start to pick apart my ability to do it right or get down on myself for not being further along in my practice. I injure my own self-worth. According to Brené Brown's research, comparison is not an emotion, but it drives all sorts of big feelings. The ones she lists in her book, Atlas of the Heart, are admiration, reverence, envy, jealousy, resentment, and two German words, Schadenfreude, which means pleasure derived from someone else's suffering, and Freudenfreude, which is the enjoyment of another's success. As I become aware of the big feelings that come up because of comparison and learn to practice ahimsa, I'm given the opportunity to become curious and ask questions. Is it envy or jealousy or resentment? Can I turn that envy into admiration? Can I appreciate the gifts of others, whether it's material or physical or intellectual, without judgment? Am I celebrating someone else's failures because it makes me feel better about myself? Can I turn that into a compassionate response? Can I celebrate Eve's love of art, or Martha Bain's gift of exhortation, or Natalie's passion for sustainability? Can I enjoy the UU band and the voices of the choir and not get down on myself because I can't carry a tune? These are easy questions and a resounding yes. I Freudenfreude the gifts you all share with us. But can I admire and celebrate instead of condemn or judge and lose my own sense of self-worth when I see a friend with a child who's happy and successful and wins all the awards and competitions while my child struggles? Can I have compassion towards the unhoused and unemployed, the ones whose misfortune I sometimes think is suffering of their own making? Can I celebrate the one who excels at work and continuously sells more, makes more money, drives a nicer car, lives in a nicer house, and takes more vacations and is set for early retirement, instead of judging them as hyper-ambitious and materialistic? And perhaps even more important, can I celebrate my own successes, no matter how small, without judging and comparing them against another's? Can I have compassion toward myself and my shortcomings without slipping into feelings of despair and self-condemnation, and without turning it outwards through harsh words or judgment toward my family or coworkers? Can I love myself the way I want to love others? Ultimately, violence stems from the way we think of and treat ourselves, how we speak to ourselves, how we see ourselves. In a little book titled Yamas and Niyamas by Deborah Dell, in the section about ahimsa, it says, our inability to love and accept all the pieces of ourselves creates ripples, tiny acts of violence that have huge and lasting impacts on others. Nonviolence is woven with love, and love of other is woven with love of self. These cannot be separated. Love of self may feel uncomfortable. Most of us here were probably not brought up to consciously love ourselves. In fact, if you were brought up in a religious or Christian environment, you were probably encouraged to deny yourself and to check yourself if you became too self-interested. If you're familiar with the two greatest commandments that Jesus taught his disciples, loving yourself may sound a little backwards. Jesus said, you shall love your God, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But looking at this anew, Jesus made an assumption that love of others stems from a healthy love of self. And if you believe that the divine is within each of us, loving ourselves is loving God. Don't confuse self-love with selfishness. Love of self is a mature and healthy way to be in the world. When we love ourselves, we embody a generosity of spirit. Striving ceases, and we can be curious about others with a desire to know them instead of competing and comparing. Comparisons can be very odious indeed, and we can't prevent them from happening. But when we live in awareness and curiosity, comparisons can lead to compassion towards and appreciation of ourselves and others. By asking questions and remembering that each of us have our own gifts that we bring to the world, we can learn to offer love instead of judgment and create peace instead of inciting violence. So now I'm going to have you do something a little uncomfortable. We're going to take our cue from Snoop Dogg. And there's index cards that Anne-Marie's going to hand out if you didn't get one when you came in. And we're going to write down something you love about yourself. You can use one of Snoop Dogg's, you know, just I love myself. You can just write that. Or it can be something very specific, not in comparison with others, but just something innately you. It can be something about your appearance or personality, or it can even be your flair for decorating or your love of fine wine, something that's just you. If you don't have an index card, raise your hand and someone will get one to you. There's one up here. And after you write it down, you take it home and you stick it to your mirror or something. But while you're doing that, I'm going to end with what was read at a yoga class I attended last week. Thank you, ladies, for handing those out. Okay, you've got it in mind. You know what you're going to write down? Speak to yourself as you would to the one you love the most. Honor and respect your mind, body, and soul. Take care of yourself by catching negative self-talk and reframing self-judgments. You deserve kindness, love, and approval. Say something loving to yourself each morning. With practice, your thoughts toward yourself and others will change. Love will emit powerfully from you, and you will become irresistible.